Welcome, people, to the session, Brain Injury Matters, a self-advocacy group run by and for people with intellectual disability. That's what I said, didn't I? Okay. My apologies. Welcome, people, to A Hitchhiker's Guide Through the Brain Maze and Other Journeys. Brain Injury Matters is a self-advocacy group run by and for people with an ABI. It goes for 40 minutes. I will now ask each of the group members to introduce themselves and then take control of the session.
Hi, my name is Peter Ferguson. This is Neil Cameron, a former president and treasurer. Kelvin Lim, a committee member, and Lisa Brontos, the vice president. My name is Peter Ferguson, and I'm the president of Brain Injury Matters, BIM, a self-advocacy group for and run by people with ABI. Who knows what an ABI is? Everyone. That will help my presentation. Thank you. Awareness raising is vitally important, including to the people with an ABI. To this end, BIM applied for and received a sizable grant from the Health Department. With the money, we intend producing a kit. It is aimed at those with newly diagnosed and not so newly diagnosed ABI. As you can see, it's in an unmissable big blue box. And it's not complete yet, but almost there. And I'll run through a few of these things in here. Firstly, we've got a book of ideas which is included to help people create a visual diary. Yeah. And while it's important to include medical information, and it will be in the kit, we'll have fact sheets on behavior and cognitive behavior, living. I need my glass, justice, and the legal component, community and social area, rehabilitation, medical, mental health, alcohol and other drug causes, and a parent's guide. It is important that I guess those medical issues are included in the kit, but it is also incredibly important to cover the psychological emotional area, so we do that too. We have two DVDs, Sink or Swim with Neil Cameron Pickering, and Break His Crown with Ross Cotty. And we'll have a last contact book with lots of contact. When some go out of date, there'll still be some relevant contacts. And also we'll have a PowerPoint with Lisa Brumptus, which tells of her journey from her accident in Greece through to the present time. We'll see it later. And it will also include lots of personal stories, reassuring the individual that no, they're not alone, and plenty of others have been on this journey. It will also be on a CD for the as I said, I'm more disabled than just my AVR. Falling Off the Edge. That is a booklet produced by a BIM committee member who is also an artist, and she there'll also be a pocket diary for those with memory problems. And a newsletter from BIM, and a production of Sun by Synapse, Brain Injury Queensland. And it will be a fantastic resource, and for someone who's had the absolute cataclysmic experience of having an ABI, it will be a welcome book of goodies designed to help them on their journey. I'll leave my three co-presenters to relate their personal journey in detail.
Hello, everyone. Hi. I am Kelvin. I'm a committee member of BIM. I had my ABI in 2000 from a stroke, and like everyone else, didn't expect to have something like that, let alone a stroke. But anyway, it happened, and it started me on a journey that is of self-discovery and also of a recovery. So here I am now, 14 years later, able to tell my story again, though not by... It is not often I tell my story to anybody, but I think I was... Please bear with me. I guess we all learn by stories, from stories, and I did learn from many of the other members from their own story. I learned from how to cope with having an ABI and living with it. And I heard just before that stories are important in our lives and learn from, and it helps each other. So here I am anyway. So back to 14 years ago, I had a stroke. Came on suddenly, not expecting it, wasn't doing anything strenuous, just standing looking, reading a notice board. You wouldn't think that something like that would cause a stroke, but it did. But that's not the cause of it. Found out later, and so... I was at Bentley and by the beach, reading something. So, anyway, that's... At that time of my life, I just completed my uni course and about to attend the graduation ceremony a few days later, and I didn't make it to that. I was in hospital due to my stroke. Woken up, the first thought that came to mind when I woke up was, oh, got this ceremony to go to, but then I was told that I missed it because I was in a coma. But anyway, so of course, the realization of that finally dawned slowly, and it was really hard accepting it. And what else? Oh, it was hard. But looking back now, my journey has been quite interesting. Surprisingly, it taught me a lot about myself. I learned a lot about myself, what I can do and what I couldn't do, and what I could do with the help of other people with me, beside me, and learn from my other members here that life still continues, and I found out that life continues whether you are in it or with or without you, I should say that. So I chose to be in life, and so kept up with what difficulties I have to face. And it's not easy, but it is, having gone through it, it is quite a, what's the word? It's been quite incredible, actually. But, no buts. I mean, it is difficult, it's hard, but anyway, sorry for I'm rambling on, but anyway. A lot of bad, low times, low moments, but also a lot of good times looking back. I have learned, how do I cope? I cope by learning from others and also adopting a thought or a philosophy as such that if anyone, let's say, I became quite conscious of the way I was, being physically affected. My left side is affected, and going out in public was quite a difficulty at the beginning. So I've learned to cope with it by thinking that if anyone has a problem with it, it is their problem, it's not mine. So I just kept going with it. And not realizing this until recently, it dawned on me that by going out frequently and doing what I want to do, it is also a way of educating other people out in the public that about ABI. And I was surprised by some people who recognized the effects of stroke, and some have come up to me and said that you must have had a stroke. I didn't take any offense to it, and I thought I was quite glad some people do actually know about stroke. And has been quite a lot of positives along the way. So, met some really nice people within the disability sector. And BIM, that was really good getting to be part of BIM. When I joined BIM, it was known as Bear in Mind, sorry. They are known as Bear in Mind. My sister calls them, I didn't tell you this, Care Bears. She forgot Bear in Mind and she said Care Bears. Okay, so yeah, BIM has been quite a big part in my journey. Having joined BIM in probably 2003 or 2004, something like roughly 10 years now I've been with BIM. And I've been a secretary with them too. And now since I'm not holding any post, just a general member, just a committee member, but good enough. Enjoying the company of my fellow members, having a lot of good time. Yep, so I think that's basically right up to today. That's my journey. Thanks for listening. Hi. One more person would like to share a story would be Lisa.
Hi, everyone. Hi, everyone. My name's Lisa, and I was born in Melbourne. I'm going to be reading, not like Calvin. I was born in Melbourne, Richmond, where I now live, have lived most of my life in Australia, except the year where I lived, in which I lived in Brunswick West, and the time I lived in Greece. Just before the accident, I was working for the SDA, the Shop Distributive and Allied Employees Association, the largest union in Australia, in South Bank. At that time, I had started to try to live in England. But before going to England, however, I stopped over in Greece to see family and friends. Then my life changed. 1997 is the last year I remember post-coma. This memory, however, was mistaken. In fact, the year was 2006, approximately a few months after the accident that changed my life. How does one explain the gap? I'm sure there is a medical term for it, but the reality is, putting aside the existence of the medical field, it's a gap. A gap that is not so easy to come to terms with. Sometimes easier than others, but I have come to learn from very bitter experience, it is far more difficult for others. I had the accident in Greece. The accident was just that, or I like to think so. What actually happened was a drunk driver lost control of his car, which then swerved in my direction. In some detail, I was sitting, waiting for a taxi, taking to Piraeus, then on a ferry boat to Santorini to spend some time with a friend. A drunk driver lost control of his car, which climbed the footpath and ran through the bus stop where I was waiting. I was then taken to the Asclepio, a hospital in a seaside area of Athens, one which is named after the ancient Greek god of medicine. There, Greek doctors, against all expectations, brought me back to life, the life I have been reintroduced to. I had traveller's insurance, and after they were convinced I was Australian and a citizen of Australia, and as soon as I was medically able, I was flown out and back to Australia. That is pretty impressive that I went through something like that, got flown back first class with a doctor and a nurse, but I don't remember a single bit of it. They told me. After an international coma, both in Greece and in Australia, of 3 months, whilst back in Australia talking to friends, they told me, while at the Royal Melbourne Hospital, it was okay to speak in English now so I can be understood. The reason for that confusion? The coma. As it turns out, I was living in Greece from 91 to 97, and in 97 I returned to Australia, and therefore, according to my post-comatose understanding, I was still in Greece. My first diagnosis was in Greece from a Greek doctor. The diagnosis was, η πρώτη διάγνωση ήταν ότι θα ξεχνούσατε μία γλώσσα, μάλλον τα ελληνικά, γιατί δεν σπούδασα στα ελληνικά. Did you get that? The first diagnosis was that I would probably forget one language, most likely Greek, because I didn't study in it, which really goes to somewhat explain the absolute majesty and mystery of the brain. That's as much as I've been told, that as well as the extent that my body was broken. Nearly finished. I don't remember being told anymore as to what I was up to, but I do remember odd events that solely don't make much sense, especially when what I remember as happening in 1997. As it turns out, that must have been an incredibly busy year, given that whatever happened actually happened, and added to that also the events that apparently happened between 97 and 2006. So for me, 1997 was an incredibly busy year. It is what I remember, rightly or wrongly, and I don't think I should apologize for remembering or forgetting. The rehabilitation, after this came the rehabilitation at various institutions. The rehabilitation, one lot was at the Royal Talbot, which dealt with various types of brain injury in a very civilized and very therapeutic way. I considered it my second home. The other rehabilitation place, and here I fear mentioning names because I can't even imagine what will come out of the mention of the institution's name, was just that, or I thought so, an institution with the term rehabilitation centre attached after it. In fact, when I asked one of the staff, and here you may understand which place I'm referring to, by asking what are we transitioning from and toward what in particular, the response was a laugh. As it turns out, they both, in their own ways, allowed me to reintegrate back into society. While I received rehabilitation from the one centre, the other centre I needed rehabilitation from undergoing their form of rehabilitation, which just goes to prove the diversity of brain injury. Beyond all of this, I'm back in Melbourne, learning of the impractical nobility of human rights, about the importance of self-advocacy, but I can't really believe it's a vital importance, it's a vital importance in the world of disability, given that it's something so completely natural, I dare say expected in the able-bodied world. I am also back at university now, and I'm going to do my Master of Human Rights, although I'm very happy to be studying this. I can't believe the impracticality of human rights, given their absolute fundamentality. I have also found work on a casual basis, given my intent to study. Personal confidence has taken a beating, is now non-existent. I also get tired a lot easier. I socialise, but mainly during the day. I hardly go out at night, basically because I'm so tired. I've also embraced the written electronic reminders, which allow me to operate in a better, more functional way. In the meantime, I'm trying to live my life independently, or as independently as possible, given the caring, patronising intent of others. It would be absolutely lovely if society, which not only includes individuals, but also institutions, would treat me with a little respect and dignity and allow me or us the rights and hopes which are allowed to every other human being. Given that what I've been through, I have taken it somewhat stubbornly, and if you knew me before the accident, this would not surprise you at all.
Does this work as well? Oh, that's good. Thank you. My name's Neil Cameron. I'm up here because I have pages to read also, and it's just easier for me to turn the pages over when I've got something to sit them on. My first memories, as I became aware of myself, where am I? My first recollections was waking in Royal Talbot Hospital in a private ward, wondering where I was and who those people in white coats were. I didn't know anybody or recognise anyone. Everyone around me was foreign, so I thought I must be dead. This was weeks following a car accident where a semi-trailer coming towards our car forced us off the road and knocked us down an embankment with a pallet load of foodstuffs coming through the windscreen, hitting me above the right eye and forcing me into the back seat. I, to this day, do not have any memories of the accident. I remember the dinner I had the night before, and the next more memories were in Royal Talbot Hospital. What an amazing fear protection the brain creates for itself, because it blocking traumas. So gaining recognition was traumatic. I couldn't recognise anything, and my eyesight was shattered with broken glasses, and I had gained severe double vision, so everything was a badly blurred double haze. I couldn't think nor could I make any physical movements. When I thought of words, which was extremely difficult, I couldn't get the words to pass my lips. It was days before I saw any familiar faces or heard any familiar voices, and even then, when they constantly explained to me what had happened, I didn't know where I was or why I was there. It was a mystery to me. My new world was unlikable. I was numb with not having any thoughts. My head was numbed, feeling dizzy all of the time, similar to being drunk all the time from alcohol. I struggled to feed myself, to talk, and found walking almost impossible. After some days, I was starting to get used to things. My thoughts were starting again, and I accepted some things. My OT wanted me to walk, and I found this extremely difficult. I preferred not to walk. However, staff had other ideas and persevered with me walking. Challenges and recognition. Some of the challenges I found with my recovery and with the nursing staff implementing their skills in my recovery were difficult for me to comprehend at the time. I didn't have any ideas what to recognise. Why were they insisting on me walking when I couldn't even stay awake for any length of time and constant dizziness? My OT bought some plant samples for me to identify, as I was currently managing my plant nursery business, and I couldn't recognise them all or name any. But I was still leading with my marketing skills and said to her that I would get my production foreman to name them for her. She declined my offer. My bed got wet often, and I was constantly being asked if I needed to go to the toilet. And I wonder what they were talking about, as even as a child I never wet the bed. I assured them that raining outside and the rain must be coming in through the window. Nevertheless, they insisted on checking under the blankets to feel for any wetness. My speech was difficult, and I was unable to think of words to say. So much of my speech was burbled. I was moved to another rehabilitation hospital, Hampton Rehab, which was closer to my home, making travel easier for family and friends. Following rehab, I was in rehabilitation for 6 months, and by the time I left rehabilitation, I was able to walk for a short period of time, even if slowly with a wide gait. My speech had improved, and I could speak so others could understand me. I was very weak, and everything I did was an effort, so I continued to sleep often during the day. My return to work was challenging, as I was so unsure of myself, and my routine I had was gone. I had a lot of difficulty in recognising plants, with constant double vision hampering my ability more. Dizziness continued, which made me feel very uncertain. Throughout my recovery over many months, years, I could only stay awake for a few hours, and my physical weakness prevented me from consistent work. I have physical pain in different parts of my body, and as I didn't have any broken bones in my body following the accident, the medical explanation was stress and strain. It was not an easy explanation for me to accept, as even today I still have some of these pains. My temper was very easily aroused, as I couldn't fully understand the information I was receiving. My biggest difficulty was understanding anything past the first sentence. I would get very annoyed when I didn't understand things, which was very often. It got so bad at times I even considered suicide, as I didn't believe my life was worth living. I was diagnosed with cognitive limitations, and returning to my managerial position should not be taken on. I had other ideas and didn't want to be hampered in my dream of chosen occupation, as I believed I could do the job satisfactorily. I had a full-time staff of 6, and I relied on them to keep me informed, which they did. Unfortunately, my decision-making ability was not good, hampered by a cash flow shortage, and my business went into a shutdown situation. My debts were very high and selling was extremely difficult, so I persevered in a shutdown situation with the assistance of one, sometimes two friends' support, with virtually nil stock, as I found it extremely difficult to do any form of work, and my skills were very much reduced. My doctor agreed to me applying for the invalid pension, which I got, and that at least paid the interest repayments on the second mortgage I had to take out on my business. It was a third-party accident claim before TAC was introduced. No one would accept liability for my injuries, and I went to countless doctors and professionals in all fields for the opposition to try and prove I didn't have any injury. It was years after my accident before they admitted any liability, and they made me an offer of around $17,000. I was devastated as my medical expenses alone was in the $100,000 mark, and not to mention my personal loss. I initially got a lot of support from friends and associates. However, as time passed and I began to recover, everyone thought I was okay, and they all disappeared from my life. I was alone in my life as communication was very difficult, and I was continually frustrated. All I had was immediate family giving their support. I now realise that it was just as difficult for them as it was for me. It was possibly the most difficult time of my life. I was relearning how to live my life again, how my new body worked. It was like jamming in my previous life's journey into a few short years, and on top of that, I was in extreme financial poverty, existing, barely surviving. Everything seemed to be on top of me without any leeway. I didn't have a spare dollar to spend on myself, and everything seemed to be a negative probability. After 6 years or so, my case came to the trial in the Supreme Court, and I employed a very good lawyer, who later became a Queen's Counsel, and my case was settled on the steps of the Supreme Court. I at least could repay some of my debt. I was pleased to be able to go to the Centrelink and say I didn't need the pension. They in turn said to me that I would always be on the invalid pension, and if my earning ever dropped, I would be looked after. That turned out to be a fallacy, as I'll explain later. Building my dream. Following my settlement, I began to rebuild my dream of what I wanted to do with plants. I was able to refresh my dream as before my injury, I had drawn detailed plans of a nursery layout, including extensive display gardens. I was previously worked with highly skilled horticulturalists and had developed significant plans of plants our nursery would produce, enabling home gardeners to develop a healthier lifestyle with Australian plants. I set about developing a state-of-the-art production nursery, which was managed with very few staff required, with a capacity of 200,000 plants ranging in size from semi-advanced to advanced. It filled the production gap for my customers. With the recession of the 1990s and with very high debt, I couldn't maintain the turnover necessary to operate. It was 10 years post-injury. I was working very long hours with a very much reduced physical and mental capacity to my pre-injury years. I sold the property and assets to recover as much debt as possible. I searched for employment, and with the recession taking its toll, was unable to find any. I returned to Centrelink for assistance, remembering them telling me my invalid pension entitlement would be available for me. As it was over 5 years since my settlement, and the invalid pension had changed its name and application requirements, I found I was no longer supported. Major amendments had been made to the Social Security Act. Centrelink changed from having officers looking after you individually to all documents going to a central office. I was told all my records had been destroyed, and seeing I had some compensation money, then I was not entitled to any assistance from Centrelink. It is amazing how all of your records are destroyed except your bank account information. With this came the lessening of the skills required for Centrelink workers, and with long-term benefits becoming extremely hard to gain, I, like many others at the time, was placed on New Start Allowance with a need for job searching on a weekly basis. Seeking employment. Centrelink job searching proved fruitless, and with the so-called privatisation to job search companies, the employment options were even more dismal. The only jobs I ever secured was by my own efforts, and with these, and these were on a limited basis, lasting at best for a few weeks. I did gain some longer-term jobs through subcontracting and self-employment. The only employment lasting for a 3-year period was through a friend I knew who managed a retail shop. With this job, I worked a total of 3 hours per week. Today, I am part of the hidden disability group who look fine, recovering from injury and capable of most tasks. It is beyond the edge of those tasks which needs to be accepted. Importance of groups. In the mid-1990s, I became involved in groups, both self-advocacy and support, where I discovered positive improvements to acceptance of ABI. I found by supporting each other, we all strengthened in these main areas: knowledge, understanding and support. I learnt more about ABI and how we all had commonalities. I learnt from others a different understanding for myself and how we all had a common aim. Support for each other was strengthening for myself and bonded group friendships. Groups started with meeting people. It's so much more comfortable meeting people with similar issues. Having a chat over coffee, going to the movies, playing 10-pin bowls or having a barbecue. These are things I would never have done on my own. Self-advocacy is mutual support for issues that are common frustrations to us. Issues such as the way people look at us when we walk by, the visual abuse we receive when we speak, the narrow attitudes towards our abilities or lack of our former abilities, lack of employment, poor understanding by authorities such as Centrelink and our current Prime Minister. In some situations, self-advocacy, learning of our rights, leads on to advocacy, where we have personal issues that can be overwhelming. An advocate will listen to understand the outcome you are seeking and find the best solutions for you. Without groups, I would never have known about advocacy and most likely have made incorrect choices which would have led to more aggravation. Thank you.